Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Well, we're partially live, Andrew.
What, is somebody half dead? Why are we only partially live?
Because somebody's missing that's supposed to be here.
The Spanish Inquisition?
I don't know where the hell Tony is, but we'll find out here. We're going to take a brief musical interlude and see if we can't locate Tony, because he's supposed to be here.
Maybe he's pulling at Seth Rollins, and he was here the whole time, but he's waiting for a special guest.
I mean, it's not I wouldn't put it past Tony to have a special guest. We'll be right back with the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Podcast Network. CSPNN.
We're not doing that anymore.
Is this the final scene in our tragic play? Only curtains remain to
okay, I don't know what the fuck is going on here, Andrew, but we got a podcast to do. Hopefully Tony will join us a little bit late.
Yeah, he knows the number. He'll figure it out.
Hopefully. One would think. All right, anywho, what do you think we go ahead and get
plus,
into
you know,
wait, calm down.
you have to also remember, maybe he's being nice, and last week we had the most hits we had on, you know, chairshot.com, and Raw Reaction was all the way up in the number two trending when it was just you and me. So maybe Tony realizes where the talent lies in the show.
Yeah, I got a funny feeling he's about to call in and start bitching at me. Well, no, that would require him to actually be in the queue to have heard what you just said, which he's not.
Exactly.
Right, we'll figure out what the hell's going on with the missing co-host here. It's Encyclopedia Brown and the missing co-host at this point. But for now, we get to the two people that are here, and we talk tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, the go-home edition for the 2018 edition of SummerSlam. I almost said Survivor Series, because all these goddamn pay-per-views run together.
Yeah, basically, yes, I agree.
All right, so we open up the show tonight with Ronda Rousey, and Ronda comes out starting on kind of a down note, mentioning the passing of Jim the Anvil Neidhart. We'll talk about Anvil a little bit later on once we get into the part of the show where they actually pay tribute to him. And then it breaks down into basically a kind of generic promo about Alexa and what's going to happen at SummerSlam. She's interrupted. Well, first she introduces Ember Moon as her backup for tonight since Natalya's not there. And then she tells Alexa that she's going to take the title off of her. Alexa comes out and says Ronda's been saying the same old thing, and then points out that Ronda's still nothing but an overrated, overhyped rookie, and that she's not going to get the job done on Sunday. Your thoughts on the opening segment? We'll talk about the match in a second.
Meh. Like, the involvement of Anvil's passing in Ronda's promo was somewhat unnecessary, but I don't know, because it didn't really add anything to what she said. Then she kind of deviated to generic insert here, I'm going to win it, insert pay-per-view here. So, I don't know. Like, the whole thing match included just fell really flat for me, and I felt like I could be doing anything else with the first 30 minutes of the show, and it would have been more productive.
Especially beating up those indie geeks, right, Tony?
I know, right? What the fuck? I assume you're talking about Ronda Rousey opening with a tribute, if you will, to Mr. Anvil. I'm pretty sure we're going to read quite a few reports about people being offended and how they're using this and exploiting death to make Ronda crowd favorite, but I wouldn't go that far. I will side with Andrew, though. It did nothing for me. I don't... thank you, but
I think this is going to be one of those situations where it's not necessarily Ronda Rousey, the character, speaking the words that she did at the start to Anvil. I think it's Ronda Rousey, the person, talking to her friend Natalya and just kind of wishing Natalya the best as she's going through this difficult situation. We get a more specific Anvil tribute a little bit later on in the show. Like I said, we'll talk about that when we get to it. The opening contest, though, is Alexa Bliss taking on Ember Moon, and we actually get Ember Moon picking up a disqualification victory, even though Alicia Fox blows up the finish, with a disqualification at 12 minutes and 20 seconds. I'm assuming Alicia's breaking up of the Eclipse was supposed to be a little bit more dramatic than what it was, rather than the referee kind of just having to feebly call for the disqualification. Because, oh my God, Alicia Fox is in the ring. Oh my God. Andrew?
Well, yeah, Alicia missed something. I don't know if she was supposed to pull her out by the foot or just grab her or something like that. But it looked funky. But the only takeaway I really had from that match was I'm surprised they made Alexa look so competitive in the ring. Because Alexa didn't look bad, and... as I've said multiple times on this show, Alexa's improved in the ring, but lots of people still like to see her just as the pretty blonde heel that can't wrestle. So it's interesting that they kind of gave her a decent showing against Ember, who most people are very high on and they've booked fairly strongly aside from her one loss to Sarah Logan. But yeah, that was my big takeaway, was them making Alexa look competitive in ring and not just with, you know, dirty heel tactics. Tony, what did you think?
I do believe that Alexa is a hot blonde heel.
You know what I mean. Come on.
No, I really do. I believe that. No, I've always thought Alexa was perfectly serviceable, and the fact of the matter is she's new, so you can really only go up. I mean, at least she's not Eve Torres, right? Yeah, this was, I don't know, this was a something that happened throughout the whole show for me. Was like, okay, cool. I mean, but I never felt, like, engaged to the point that I really, really need to see SummerSlam, which is unfortunate, because when I watch SmackDown, I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to be good. I don't know what the difference here is, aside from the writing crew, possibly, but this was an example of that, where we have a match that's set in stone, but I don't think anybody cares enough about the players involved to want to watch it to a point where they're like, this didn't feel like the go-home show. This just felt like a show before a network special, which is weird considering it's SummerSlam.
Well, I mean, technically, though, it is a network special. There's no such thing. Well, I mean, they still technically have pay-per-views, but you know what I mean.
But
regardless,
the big
on.
Fours don't feel big anymore, or at least so far they haven't. I agree with that with Tony, where the Mania and SummerSlam, the hype, it doesn't exist. Or it doesn't come over correctly on television. And it's weird, because I remember being a lot more excited for bigger events in the past.
I would take days off of work.
Oh, shit. You really would?
Yeah, like, I would take Sunday off. I'd be like, listen, every third Sunday of the month, give or take, I'm not working. And this is, I mean, this is a long-withstanding thing. Like, almost in the interview of any bar that I've worked at, like, I just want you to know, Sunday, at least once a month, it's going to be kind of a big deal. Just don't ask questions. It's better if you don't know. I just have to take it off. And now I'm like, I'm not losing money for this shit.
That's kind of saying something, really.
Yeah, right. It really is. Tell me what changed when I used to have to spend $40 to $60 and lose money, lose income from work, from not working. And I was willing to do that versus now where I only have to spend $10 a month and I'm not willing to miss work.
I think that's a personal investment situation. You don't feel like you're as interested in the product anymore either based on the sheer amount of weekly product that we get too. Pay-per-views don't feel special when Raw itself is 3 hours every week.
Agreed.
All right, we're moving on here. We go into a video package between the issues between Heyman and Lesnar. We'll hear from Roman Reigns and apparently Paul Heyman a little bit later on in the show. Let's just tie it all together here. Roman Reigns promo in the ring talking about the match. I'm going to be entirely honest with you guys. I missed most of the promo. I was on the phone with my girlfriend. I apologize. I'll let you guys take the reins. However, I do pick up when Paul Heyman comes out. So I'll let you guys talk about Roman's portion, and then we'll discuss the Heyman portion together. Andrew, go ahead and take the lead here.
Okay. I don't know. Like, it's like what Tony said before, with nothing was really extremely compelling or intriguing to the point of wanting to actually pay attention to what they were saying. Like, Roman was just typical, I'm going to beat Brock so bad he goes back to UFC with his head up Dana White's ass, which I don't really know what that means. Like, it just, because Lesnar was really never a brown noser, so his head never really should have been near White's ass anyway. So that felt like a really stupid way to get in, you know, slightly a curse word that wasn't bitch. And sure, as Tony has said, you also, Harry, when Heyman comes on, Heyman is really invested in his angle. He really commits to it. And he plays his part well. But, come on, anybody that's been watching wrestling for even a handful of years figured those were crocodile tears from Heyman last week. And, yeah, regardless of how much conviction he had in his piece, it was not surprising. It was like an M. Night Shyamalan twist, but, you know, like The Village or like Lady in the Water. Not one of the good ones. So, yeah, and I guess Mace comes out like water bottle spray now, so that's fun. Maybe they changed Mace from when I was younger. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old. Tony, how did you feel about this thing that they call the promo?
Wait. Before Tony speaks here, how do you know what Mace feels like?
Everybody had a course in school. Everybody had a course in school with the whole, you know, self-defense thing, at least where I was. So you kind of had to see how mace was used and how to use it.
I did not have such courses. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, okay, so this goes in line with the motivation for pay-per-views and the feelings that we used to have in selling them. Now, I'm not saying that I wanted this to happen. You know, I'm not really big on fantasy booking. However, I feel that if this were a few years ago, maybe 10 plus, Heyman would have said, take this with you and let me know on Sunday what you think. And that would have been the end of the segment. And we would have had a cliffhanger. And we would have went into Sunday wondering, is Heyman going to screw Reigns over or is he going to screw Lesnar over? And we would have seen clips of when he turned on Lesnar and helped the Big Show. And we would have seen moments of Heyman's, you know, weaselness. And then the main event would come, and we would have spent 6 full days and 3.5 full hours wondering if Heyman was going to help or hurt. Now, a smarter fan would know that Heyman was going to screw Reigns over. But the fact of the matter is there's engagement, there's anticipation, and there's a build. Tonight, we got what we knew what was going to happen, and that's what sucks. We just fucking knew it, you know? It's not cool. It's not, oh, my God. It's not vintage either, Cole. It's not. It's just annoying. You could have done anything else. You could have had Reigns show up, and then just Brock just walked in, F5'd him, and walked out. You could have done any number of things. The only saving grace here is that we didn't get a tug-of-war over the belt.
I love how you go back to that one.
Hello? Are we
still
there?
What was that? Yeah. I don't know what Harry said.
All right.
We good now?
Harry said tug of wars are saved for WrestleMania season.
Oh.
Yeah, well, they didn't do it this year either, so that's good. Because I remember Tony had a similar complaint for the WrestleMania build that at least there wasn't a tug of war. So that's good, right? That's upward motion in the storytelling level. Yeah, right? Maybe?
I feel like Tony has a valid point about kind of leaving it lay at the Heyman handing this slip of paper to Roman Reigns. Because I will give Roman Reigns credit for one thing in that segment that I did see. Whenever it was in that segment that Heyman quoted the line to Roman that Sika had said to Heyman, you could actually see a moment of genuine reflection in Roman's face there that kind of sold the line that Heyman had just said. And if they could have had Heyman give Roman Reigns the letter right then and there and then call it a segment there, then I think that that could have worked as well. Or you could have had Heyman give Reigns the letter and then Lesnar come in and still destroy Reigns, but not have Heyman get involved in the beatdown like he did with the pepper spray.
Agreed.
Tony, anything?
Well, with regards to the, you know, pepper spray, it's just, I won't say that it's cliche wrestling because we haven't seen that in a very long time, but it just didn't do anything. And, I mean, at the end of all of this, you still had some of the crowd chanting one more time. So whatever you were trying to do over the past few weeks, it didn't work.
No, it worked, but there's always going to be that contrarian, divisive crowd. Don't take a couple rowdy, loudmouth assholes as suddenly the storyline didn't work.
No, it didn't work.
Yeah, I'm totally
It worked better over Twitter than you think it would, because last few weeks you've actually seen people saying stuff like, Roman Reigns is actually likable, or the crowd was more behind him, and then they had a "We want Roman" chant like 2 weeks ago or whatever that was. So there's been stuff.
Want,
you can't. You're not going to build.
Rome wasn't built in a day.
Neither
was Roman. I agree that the crowd has changed. However, I'm almost positive they were chanting "We want Strowman." And also,
Jesus Christ, this is like a boo or a boo earned kind of moment.
Here's what I think happened. I think that they were able to successfully turn the crowd on Brock. They were not able to successfully get the crowd firmly behind Reigns. And I don't think they want to. I don't think they care too much to do that.
And that's fine. That's all you need for this feud, is to get them away from Brock and just at least okay with the thought of Reigns at least being a transitional champion, so the belt is on television every day. Like, they did a good job at making Brock dislikable.
Yeah.
See, but I would disagree with that statement about getting the belt onto Reigns, even if it's as a transitional champion, because they're still indifferent towards Roman. And I would rather, I find that there's more money in hatred than there is in indifference. People are going to want to pay to see Brock Lesnar lose to somebody that they're actually behind, whereas they're going to be indifferent if it's Roman again. And I think we've proven that time and time again in the matches between Reigns and Lesnar going into this Sunday.
The places still nearly sell out. So what's the difference between 70 and 72,000 between, like, partial sellout and a complete sellout? Like, people are still paying to boo him or to bring in a beach ball or to be vocally disinterested, which is just asinine, but it's your money, you do what you want with it. But I don't think there's much of a difference. Plus, if you think about some of Strowman's bigger matches, not against Roman Reigns, he gets exposed. Like, his match against Lesnar, he gets exposed. Like, Strowman is nowhere near where he should be for a main event push.
Tony, anything?
No, not really.
I feel like how when Andrew called me out on defending the Pittsburgh crowd a couple of weeks ago, it's kind of what he's doing with Roman here.
No, because
well, I mean,
we have 3 weeks of the way that was built, and it's three different cities. So you're going to obviously get different personalities here or there, but overall, the greater landscape of the situation has at least gone against Brock, and you see a little more support for Roman.
Tony, you were saying?
No, I agree with that sentiment. I mean, there's no denying that this plan or storyline has gotten more fan favor for Reigns. You know, you can't deny that. It has worked in that aspect. However, the character, and this is, you could easily divide this into a separate topic, but the character hasn't changed. And because of that, this is a temporary moment of bliss, if you will, because they need it. What's going to happen when Brock leaves? Are we going to get the same cocky, arrogant Reigns? Are we going to get the, you know, humbled Reigns who fought a battle and, you know, won? Or are we going to get more Lesnar? I mean, this is short-sighted storytelling that will, I'm pretty sure, bite them in the ass.
Okay, here's a question to just spin off of that, Tony. Is it the arrogance, the cocky Reigns that you didn't like, or was it the fact that previous to, say, this year, let's just, or for argument's sake, use like the last 12 months, did you just not like the stagnated, cookie-cutter, poorly executed, poorly engaged promos? Or are you okay with this more natural bitch every four words or drop an ass or a little more of a natural swagger to Reigns? Like, do you still consider it the same thing? Or do you kind of see that at least when he's more natural, people seem to be more behind even the egocentric, you know, cocky prick?
Yeah, I don't like either one of them. I haven't liked the Roman Reigns character, I don't think, ever, with the exception of being the third member of the Shield. However, the arrogance, I'm fine with arrogance. I mean, me of all people should be fine with arrogance. My ego is huge.
True.
So what
yes.
I don't like, and this is, again, this isn't Reigns' fault, what I don't like is that it doesn't make sense. It's a false arrogance. You haven't beaten Brock Lesnar, so everything that you say doesn't make sense to me. Everything that you're spewing doesn't even make sense to my little brother, who's way younger, doesn't have, you know, the mindset or the jadedness that we have. It doesn't make, hasn't Brock beaten him already? Yeah. And then he says, like, I beat him in Saudi Arabia. You were in a cage match and you broke a cage. Like, no, you didn't. So that doesn't lend true to the arrogance that he has. With regards to the cookie cutter promos before that, I didn't like that because it just didn't work. I mean, that you could give the lines that he had to anyone and it wouldn't work. Now we have someone who I believe is, yeah, a little bit more natural, a little bit more, you know, badassery and everything. However, there's no weight behind it. So it just becomes a hollow promo where you're like, all right, well, whenever you're ready to stop talking, you know, I'm ready to move on.
That's fine. I agree that the words he uses are a little asinine, but I like the way that he's been more natural and the way he's been presenting himself. So it feels like an actual tangible character, not just cookie cutter insert babyface Superman here.
Yeah.
Speaking of moving on, we probably should here. We're going to go ahead and combine the next two segments together because they're matches that bleed into each other. Corbin and Angle are arguing with each other. Angle says that he shouldn't have made the match. Corbin says that he wants a Stephanie, and she approves the match, and there's nothing Angle can do about it. That takes us into our second match on the evening, which is Baron Corbin taking on Tyler Breeze. Breeze ends up looking reasonably okay throughout the course of the match until he takes the pinfall with the hands of Corbin's B finish, the deep six at 4 minutes and 11 seconds. Corbin then proceeds to introduce Jinder Mahal as Finn Balor's opponent for the evening, and then Kevin Owens as Finn Balor's opponent for the evening because it's going to be a handicap match. Corbin introduces Balor, Angle's music hits and interrupts. Angle proceeds to say that he cannot change the match, but he can give Balor a tag team partner, giving him one in the form of the previously mentioned Braun Strowman. That match ends up seeing Mahal take the pinfall loss, as he should in this contest, since he's the only one of these four not on the SummerSlam card, to the hands of Strowman's Power Slam at 13 minutes and 50 seconds. Tony, your thoughts on Baron Corbin, Tyler Breeze, and then the tag team match that followed?
So what Corbin did was a heel thing, and it made sense, so I wasn't bothered by that. His match was every Corbin match I've ever seen. I've said it before, he's improved immensely, but tonight didn't show that. It was rest hold, rest hold, rest hold, toss. Cool ass deep six though. That was nice. That was a nice closer. And then the whole making a match thing, I don't mind that. It makes sense of his character, it makes sense of his bulliness. But Kurt Angle coming out and adding someone to the match does not make sense to me. It's another one of those things where you're like, you just throw this out there because it's convenient. But what about next week? What about the week before that? What about any other match where you could have made a change to make it fair, but didn't? So that you didn't have to say that. You didn't have to do it. You could have just made the tag match. Or you could have let Finn get his ass beat. I mean, realistically, you really could have. And it would have been fine. And it would have made... It would have added fuel to the fire of Corbin being a complete dick, you know?
Not to mention, you could have also had Strowman make the post-match save and try to get some of his feet back on Owens by bum-rushing his way through both Mahal and Sunil Singh on his way to Owens at SummerSlam. Andrew, what were your thoughts on these contests?
The Corbin match was good heel work, like Tony was saying, where gives himself the weaker opponent because he doesn't want to work as hard and that whole thing. The only, I guess, excuse that can be made that it's been established in storyline, and even Corey and Renee touched on it during the show, was Angle likes to play favorites. So he changed the match because, as it was beaten to our head last week, Angle does nothing but make matches. He's just a figurehead. So since he can make matches, that technically means he can tweak matches. And since he has a personal vendetta, it seems, against Owens, why not just insert Strowman, because it'll make it more amusing to him. And it's a way to screw somebody else over that he doesn't like. So it's this weird personal vendetta playing favorites kind of angle. Nope, no pun intended with the last name and everything. But... It makes sense story-wise. I can excuse it there. It's stupid, yes, but it makes sense. And the match just did nothing for me, though. Like, I'm completely over Strowman and that whole thing. The stupid run around the ring, the stupid everything. It's more paint-by-numbers than anybody that I've seen. And it's tiring. Like, I'm done.
What are your guys' thoughts on Corbin using a B finish in his match against Tyler Breeze here? Are you okay with it? Do you think it sacrifices any kind of credibility that Breeze may have had? Not that that's much to begin with.
I was about to say, what credibility did Breeze have to begin with?
Credibility. That's funny.
I'm not disagreeing, but, like, are you okay with him going down to a B finish? Yes,
because he's a B-tier wrestler.
It looked awesome. Well, I saw people bitching about it. That's why I wanted to ask your guys your opinion on it. Post-match, Corbin comes back out and hits the End of Days on Balor to lay him out once again. I expect some kind of stipulation to be added to this match because they had a straight singles match at Extreme Rules and it was fucking death. And I say this as somebody who likes both gentlemen. Kurt tries to get a hold of Stephanie backstage. Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre arrive 1 hour and 10 minutes into the show and complain about Seth Rollins not being there. Well, show up one time yourselves and you can bitch. Anywho, Ziggler wants to look over the contract for the SummerSlam match. And then points out that's not how you spell Ziggler, getting Angle to look at the contract, and Dolph and Drew share a laugh as they walk away. Do we have to discuss this Bobby Lashley segment? Because I kind of feel like we really don't have to.
I don't think we have to either.
Local jobber 612 is in the ring, tries to be like his hero Elias. Elias tells him to take out Lashley. Lashley comes into the ring. Jobber hits Lashley with guitar. Lashley no sells and hits a very sloppy spine buster at the end. The B team have a backstage promo where Bo Dallas is doing math in order to try to attempt to figure out how much of an opportunity they have to retain here. If Bo Dallas could have worked in some Steiner math, this would have been promo of the year. He doesn't, but it's still pretty good. What was that, Andrew?
I said I agree. I was waiting for some kind of, Steiner math, half the person, and just something, just 142% or something, but we didn't get it.
141 2/3% chance of winning, just saying. And by the way, he's fat! Anyway. That takes us into a triple threat. Well, yeah, That takes us into a triple threat for the Raw Tag Team titles where we see the B team retain after the Revival hit Shatter Machine on Bray Wyatt. Curtis Axel comes in and pitches Scott Dawson to the ring and steals the pinfall for himself at 10 minutes and 33 seconds. Your thoughts on the tag team title match, Tony?
My feed was going out for the first half of it. I missed the bulk of it. But it looked like kind of energetic. I mean, I caught the tail end of it. I caught the suplex off the top, the corner. I feel like it went along with the rest of the show. It was pretty average, which I feel isn't a knock on them because, it's okay to be average from time to time. But I guess we're getting the Revival come Sunday. I don't know. I struggled coming into the episode today because I've been gone for a couple of weeks, but so I was excited. But then I watched Raw, and it just was like this wash of apathy where I'm not mad about it. I'm just like, well, all right, let's talk about SummerSlam.
Is that why you were so late getting here?
No, I was on the phone.
Good timing. Andrew, you're up. Tag team titles.
Meh? Like, I don't know. There were some, I guess, slightly okay spots, and the suplex from the corner was interesting. But, it did nothing for me. Like, and the fact that Axel was sitting there in, like, halfway through the ropes watching the Shatter Machine, and then the pin, it telegraphed it so hard, and it's just, I don't know. When they're early to spots and it telegraphs the finish or the next spot, that kind of adds to the whole apathy of the match, because, like, I mean, if you don't care enough to actually sell it to make it look like you were just running in there and you had this bright idea, I don't know. Like, whatever, let's just move on.
All right, move on we shall. They officially announced a little bit later on in the show that it will be the Revival getting the tag team title opportunity against the B team at SummerSlam on the pre-show here. Are you guys okay with them keeping the the belts on the B team at SummerSlam? I know we'll talk more about the matches when we do our predictions here in a little bit here, but do you think that Dallas and Axel have gotten to the point where they deserve to be the Raw Tag Team Champions?
Well, I don't know about deserve. I mean, they have the titles, so I don't think it matters whether they deserve them or not. I also don't mind that they're on the pre-show. I think it's our job more so. I mean, it's the WWE's job to make these matches important, but it's also our job to accept that this is just an extension of the pay-per-view, and we should enjoy it as such. I don't know. This may very well be the opportunity that they need to prove that they can face an opponent that's worthy. You know, maybe people didn't believe Matt and Bray were the ones. The Revival has been doing a pretty good job of building themselves up, so.
Yeah, the Revival should take the belts off of them, because as much as I enjoy the B-team's antics, the change in theme song from Battle Scars to this god-awful Spirit Squad knockoff thing just proves and further hammers home the fact that they're not a serious team and just job squad, basically. So how the hell can you really keep your belt on a gimmicky, goofy-ass team like that and actually expect anybody to take it seriously? And then you've got an old-school team like the Revival with the no fist just flips and people keep trying to put them over, like, you know, this classic old-school tag team like the Brain Busters or the Andersons or something like that. And then if they lose by some fluky bullshit to a bunch of jokes, like, that just hurts the Revival more than it does build up the B-team. So, yeah, I'm over this experiment, whatever you want to call it.
Speaking of experiments, let's put the guy that doesn't get along with anybody in a tag match. Let's put Mojo Rawley on the same team as the Authors of Pain and have them face Titus Worldwide and Bobby Roode in a match that takes 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
And they all get the jobber entrance.
Tony, you weren't here for last week's episode where Bobby Roode ended the little run that Mojo has been on, and then again, Roode pins Mojo here. Do you see anything in Mojo, or do you think they're making the right decision by giving Bobby Roode a couple of wins at his expense?
I see great, well, not great, but I see something in Mojo. I've seen it over the past few weeks. I don't know that they're going to do anything with it, and I think that they've built him up just to put him down. But I also see Roode, you know, benefiting from the win. So I think maybe these two were guys. These are two guys that you probably should not have put together because no one cares about either one of them. So you don't really gain much from either one. And if there was ever a moment to prove that they didn't care about them, this was the match to prove it. You get these guys in the ring. We go straight to them already wrestling, and then about 20 seconds later, we get a SummerSlam commercial. We come back and the match is over. So what did you do for me here?
If you don't care enough to show me the match, why should I care enough to watch it? Andrew, your thoughts?
I think if Roode and Mojo have one more singles match, either pre-show of SummerSlam or the Raw afterwards, and Mojo goes over, then all those previous weeks against Tyler Breeze and No Way Jose and building up this whole you're here so work for it and don't just be a gimmick kind of thing might actually make sense, because Roode, I think as we talked about last week, is seen as being a slightly higher tier than Mojo, so him failing against him a couple times is fine as long as Mojo gets the win that validates his, I guess, rise up the ladder. So if they could do that, good. Then we didn't waste 6 weeks of storytelling or however long that lasted with the cheeseburger, Jose, and Breeze. Or they'll just bury him and then we'll go back to, you know, square one and he'll be off of television for like a month because that's how they do things. So hopefully it does something, because Mojo's at least a little different and it would be nice to see a different face somewhere in like the mid-card scene, but I don't know. It's WWE, probably not.
know, they're kind of focused on where they're at with the mid-card scene right now, especially with the Intercontinental title. But I do think that Mojo could be a valuable player in that division, especially if he shows the same fire that he showed in the build-up to this angle with Reed that he had facing off against guys like Noé José and Tyler Breeze, as Tony mentioned. Here's where we celebrate the life and the legacy of Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Any stories, any thoughts to share here? Any memories that you guys want to share about Jim Neidhart? Andrew?
Not particularly. I just want to, you know, wish my condolences.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat to Tony, where it's mostly just condolences for the whole Hart family and everybody. But I will say that since one of my favorite games as a kid was WCW NWO Thunder for the PlayStation, if you clicked a certain button on the main cast of characters you were given, they would cut a small promo as to why you should pick them. And Anvil's was fantastic. It was just him stroking his beard, laughing like a madman, just going, ever see what an anvil does to somebody when they go to cartoons? Boom! Like, that's not, I'm the anvil, baby, pick me, or something like that. Like, it was so just psychotic. It was fantastic. And
I'm 90% sure I own that game from my PS2, and now I'm going to have to pull that out of the mothballs and check that promo, because I don't remember that, but it sounds hilarious.
You should. Like, the promos were actually amazing in that little game. Like, the game itself, mediocre, but the promos were awesome.
I remember the grappling system being a bitch.
Yeah, that was a little awkward. And
We once again go over the SummerSlam card here, because apparently talking about it all night doesn't do it enough justice. We have to have an actual segment set aside in order to do so overall. We'll talk about the SummerSlam card ourselves when we get to our predictions coming up here shortly. Our next contest, I'm going to let Tony start here since his beloved is in the match, is Sasha Banks taking on the returning Ruby Riott.
It was a good match, but, well, what are we doing and who cares about what we're doing? No one, I don't. I mean, we had potential for an amazing match, and now we have a tag team. I have zero interest other than the fact that I'm attracted to Sasha. There's nothing left here for me.
Andrew, is there anything left on the bone here for you as far as this particular feud goes between Sasha and Bayley and the Riott Squad?
Oh, no, at all. Not at all. Like, the feud should be with Sasha and Bayley, but I guess they're really, really going to push for that women's tag belt reveal at some point, so they had to kind of, I guess, throw them together as a tag team and just scrap what could have been a fantastic feud for the main roster, because we all know it was a great feud in NXT. So, yeah, I actually took out my recycling at this point, so I missed some of it, but I'm assuming that it just ended in someone from the Riott Squad interfered, somebody looked stupid, and then Ruby went over.
That's pretty much the long and the short of it.
Okay.
Ruby gets the win at 8 minutes and 58 seconds aired. Anywho, all right. Our main event segment is the contract signing between Dolph Ziggler and the, much like Tony Acero at the start of the show, the not there Seth Rollins.
Hey.
You know what else isn't there? Dolph Ziggler's comedy. God, he's... Like, have you ever seen his stand-up? I haven't. I hope it's way better than anything he's ever done on WWE television. And wait a second.
I doubt he's as good as his exes.
Oh, wow.
Hey, I'm just... I saw the little clip they play of him, what, doing like a roast battle or something like that. It was actually funny. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't overly clever, but it still wasn't bad.
Maybe he's better with his own written, you know, content. And aside, besides that, the whole idea of this super passionate promo, like 5 years too late, and it didn't make sense considering what they were talking about. There was no segue from Seth Rollins isn't here, so we're going to forfeit the match to... I don't love you guys anymore. He tried. I saw the connection. you love Seth. Seth burns it down. I stole this show. But like it was like he was screaming into a vacuum because I don't think anybody cares. This was the promo that you cut when you turn heel, not when you're already heel. No one cares what you say anymore.
Okay, to be fair, Tony, he cut basically this exact same promo when he turned heel.
Well, that only amplifies my point.
That was my problem with it, is the fact that this isn't anything we haven't heard Ziggler say before. Andrew, what were your thoughts on Ziggler's promo, and then we'll talk about the big reveal at the end of the show.
It insisted upon itself. Much like Tony said, just in different words. Just, it was so just, oh my God. 5 years too late is a good way to put it. Just trying to validate why they're going so hard at Seth Rollins when their initial concept was to punish the guys who were just happy to be there, and Seth was one of the harder workers. So they tried to bring that up and tie it all back in, and it just droned on, and I don't know. The whole main event segment was just awful.
Well, let's talk about the big return that does happen here. If Seth Rollins eventually does make his way out and apologizes for everybody for having to sit through the Dolph Ziggler therapy session, he then says that he was tied up with travel arrangements, but they were not travel arrangements of his own. The fans in attendance clearly see where this is going, and you can hear the reactions starting. Rollins then points out that the contractual clause that was placed in the contract to allow Rollins to have somebody in his corner, much like McIntyre will be in Ziggler's corner, figuring that if Ziggler has a psychopath, a Scottish psychopath in McIntyre's case, then it's probably best for Rollins if he has a lunatic. Cue up the music of the returning Dean Ambrose. Tony, are you a little bit surprised that they did that on the go-home and didn't save the return for the pay-per-view itself?
Considering what we talked about earlier, I'm not surprised at that at all. Also, it was a pretty cool return. Also, Dean looked great. He looked different enough to where it was a nice, like, oh, hell yeah. And he's got a new look, which is always welcome. Always. Always. Every new look is, even if it's not good, it's like, he's trying. Because the last thing I need is stringy hair, Dean back, just doing the same look and lip-licking that he always does. I thought that this was a good way to cap off Raw. A lot of fun in it. It ended the show on the positive note as opposed to anything else.
Andrew, what were your thoughts on the return of Dean Ambrose?
Sure, it ended the show on a positive note. That's a nice way to look at it. But it did, storyline-wise, it did nothing, because when Ziggler points out the second rule, basically, everybody kind of should have already figured out, oh, they are re-debuting Ambrose here.
Yeah.
No, we talked about them doing that at the last pay-per-view when we figured, oh, well, Seth would need backup, but they just decided to push it off to SummerSlam. It's not like it's going to sell more tickets. The tickets are already sold. It's 6 days away. It's not like it's going to have anybody tune in already or buy the network, because if you don't have it already, the first month is free, so WWE's not getting money. And if you have the network and just might not have tuned in, they're still getting your $10 anyway. So financially, this doesn't make any sense. Storyline-wise, it's so obvious they could have waited for the bigger pop at SummerSlam. And this just brings up a comparison. Like, I know how people love to compare New Japan to WWE, even though you shouldn't because they're nothing alike. But in this case, the second rule, in the grand finals of the G1, Kota and Kenny Omega are best friends, so you knew they came out together. Katsuyori Shibata came out to second Tanahashi, not to his music, not to any pomp and circumstance. Tanahashi was in the ring, and Shibata just popped up on the ring behind him and just, like, you know, put his hand on his shoulder and be like, I'm here for you, buddy, you know, let's do this, take one more down. The subtlety was nice. Everybody who was watching it that I was talking with was fantastically surprised, and it's a nice, nuanced, layered way of bringing somebody into a feud or a match without needing to just blow your load all at the same time on something that doesn't fucking matter, storyline-wise, financially, nothing. It was worthless. Was it kind of fun for people? Sure, because he's likable and people like him. But it did absolutely nothing.
Actually, it did allow me to do this.
Dean fucking Ambrose.
Abso-fucking-lutely nothing.
And let me state for the record that at least Ambrose can actually still work. Shibata does fucking nothing for me because he can't wrestle anymore.
You don't know that because he didn't retire and nobody said he had to retire. He's just training the people in the LA dojo right now.
After the head injury that he suffered, they're not going to let him back. And if they do, they're fucking stupid.
People have come back from cancer, and Hanma came back from a vertebrae issue and a head issue from 9 months ago. It's possible. And with everything that we saw with Brian and his concussions and his spine, and he came back, it's possible. Calm down.
I don't know. I don't like when people get up all up their ass about the whole New Japan WWE comparison either.
I said it doesn't really work as the companies are apples to oranges, but in the concept of seconds and how you introduce them or how you bring them into a storyline, this is where it was applicable.
Don't know if I agree with that because subtlety has never been a strong suit in the WWE, so it's not exactly like that would be something they would ever do in the first place. Regardless, that takes us to the end of tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's go ahead and slap a final reaction onto this episode, and then we will get into our predictions for SummerSlam. Favorite match or moment, Tony?
Oh, shit. And this isn't giving the Dean Ambrose return credit for being amazing. It's just, you know, the only time I was like, oh, that's cool. So, Dean Ambrose returning.
Andrew?
Taking out the recycling.
I'm going to go with the tribute to Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Just because it was a classy way for the WWE to pay tribute to the fallen Big Man. Lee, great watchery moment, Tony.
Jeez. I feel like he wrote the whole show. I'll just say that the, I don't know. A lot of things I didn't like, but mostly it's just because I didn't care. Okay, we'll just go with the Lashley jobber thing. It was completely inoffensive, but if it wasn't on the show, I wouldn't have cared. And that's usually telling mark of what's necessary and what's not.
Andrew, Greg Watry.
The whole Kurt Angle involvement in the Finn Balor match, like, even though I made the storyline excuse that they built in and kind of hinted to, it's still a terrible story to play with the whole GM favoritism. So, yeah, that entire Kurt Angle story.
I'm going to go with the six-man tag match that wasted everybody's time. The athletes, the fans in attendance, and us watching at home. No one gave a fuck. Overall show rating, Tony, scale of 1 to 10.
4.
The Bret Hart special. Andrew?
3.
5. But I aim a little bit higher than you guys did because I actually enjoyed the, for the most part, I enjoyed the Heyman Roman segment there until they went overkill on the finish with it. I enjoyed the main event segment. I thought both guys came across very well, even if Tony was kind of, he did kind of point out that Ziggler was rehashing stuff that he had previously said. Rollins still seemed genuinely interested and genuinely invested in what it was his character was doing, and Ambrose looked super motivated to be there. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
Sasha.
Andrew?
Paul Heyman.
Renee Young. Granted, Coach sets a pretty low bar, but I thought for being the first woman ever to go beginning to end doing commentary on a WWE Monday Night Raw episode, Renee more than handled her own.
She was kind of non-existent through a lot of the show, though, so not like she included herself in a lot of the talking.
She didn't step all over people like Coach constantly does either, though.
They all step on each other, though. You can't just blame Coach for that one, because he tries to get in his stupid one-word gimmick and everybody else wants to cut him off or tell him why he's wrong or say it for him. And yeah, it's just stupid.
That officially wraps up the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's get into some predictions. Tony, will you be joining us for TakeOver Brooklyn predictions?
No.
Okay. Andrew, if you want to...
Will you be doing it
there
at all for the chair shot questions?
Sure. I just got to look at the card and watch maybe like an episode or two.
All right,
gotcha.
So he'll have his prediction. Andrew, if you want to, after we're done with the predictions for SummerSlam and we let Tony go, you and I can do our predictions for TakeOver Brooklyn on air if you want.
Sure.
All right, let's go ahead and get into the SummerSlam card. We start with the three announced pre-show matches, the first of which is the B-Team taking on the Revival for the Raw Tag Team titles. Tony, is this the Revival coronation at last?
No, not yet. I think they're going to win on a slightly bigger stage.
A bigger stage than Brooklyn?
Bigger stage than a pre-show.
Andrew?
I mean, I kind of alluded to it when we were doing the review. I think they have to, because the B-Team just looks like such a joke, and pre-show is still considered part of SummerSlam, so it doesn't get much bigger than one of the big four. So, yeah, Revival.
You're right, Andrew.
I'm with Andrew on this one. I think the Revival's going to take the titles off of the B-Team here. I think that Brooklyn has been the site of some of the Revival's biggest moments in their career, and this will be no exception, given the fact that they were showcased on a couple of the early NXT takeovers that were held in the city, and now they're going to have their moment on the main stage, on the main roster here in Brooklyn as well, when they take the Raw Tag Team titles. Cruiserweight titles see Cedric Alexander defend against Drew Gulak. Tony?
I haven't seen 205 since Enzo left, not because he left, by the way. So I have no idea. I'm going to go with Cedric. Let's just keep this reign going forever.
Andrew?
Daddy Gulak. He gets that win finally. It'd be nice because I think Cedric's kind of paid, you know, played out a little bit. Paid wasn't what I was going for. Played out was because, I don't know. He just seems a little bland at the moment. Plus, you've got Mustafa Ali and a couple other of the faces that are trying to build up. So, putting it on a heel would be nice.
I've been calling for Drew Gulak to get the Cruiserweight title ever since they announced that the Cruiserweight title was going to be a thing. This is his time. The title switches hands. Our third pre-show match is Rusev and Lana taking on Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega from over from SmackDown. Tony?
Shit. I'm going to give it to Rusev.
Andrew?
This obviously will play off of how Aiden plays into everything tomorrow, since we're doing this before SmackDown, but it makes sense for Rusev and Lana to get the win if Aiden isn't involved somehow.
I'm going to say Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega get the win because Aiden English is involved somehow and ends up costing Rusev and Lana the match. Let's get to the SummerSlam main card here. We're going to kind of blow through a couple of these matches just because there's so goddamn many of them on the card. Balor and Corbin, Tony.
Balor.
Andrew.
Corbin.
I'm Tony. I'm taking Finn Balor. Carmella defends the SmackDown Women's title in a triple threat against Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. Tony.
Carmella.
Andrew.
The Irish last kicker finally gets her win, yeah.
That'd be great. That's what I'm rooting for.
I think that either Becky or Charlotte wins, and the other turns on them after the match. I'm going to pick Charlotte winning and Becky turning.
So we all picked a different one. That's different.
Dolph Ziggler defends the Intercontinental title against Seth Rollins. Tony.
Shit. You know what? I don't know, because, like, I like Seth better when he's chasing. And if Dean's back, there's not a big reason for him to have the IC title right now. I'm going to go with Dolph keeping it.
Andrew.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ziggler keeping it, and then for the same reasons that I think we discussed a few weeks ago when we thought Ambrose would debut the first time, was Ambrose would turn on Rollins, and then they just have the inbuilt feud right there. So, yeah, go Ziggler. Keep your damn belt.
See, I think Ziggler would change, but I'm not entirely sold on Ambrose turning yet. And the reason I say that is because you saw the crowd reaction tonight. The crowd reaction tonight for when Ambrose came out to help Rollins on tonight's episode of Raw. I think that they might want to try to ride that reaction going forward a little bit further, and maybe do something with the Shield reunion that they weren't able to do because of injuries last time. I could see Ambrose turning on Rollins going into like Rumble or Mania of next year, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of try to re-ride the hype train that was the Shield, like they were attempting to do before Reigns got the mumps and then Ambrose got injured. Braun Strowman defends the Money in the Bank briefcase against Kevin Owens in a match where it does not matter how, if Owens wins, he gets the briefcase. Tony?
You know, logic dictates that Braun Strowman doesn't need the briefcase because he's Braun Strowman, but the idea of him having the briefcase kind of makes me okay. So, and Kevin Owens, I think it would be a way better and a bigger moment if Kevin Owens, like, were to cash in the briefcase, because, you know, he's a heel and it makes sense, blah, blah, blah. But, I don't know. I don't see Braun losing it.
So Tony's picking Braun. Andrew?
Yeah, the way they book Braun always kind of goes against conventional wrestling logic because they always make him look strong in every show, regardless if it's go home or not. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Braun here because I don't think they have him lose the contract.
I'm going to be the contrarian. I think Kevin Owens gets the briefcase here. And the reason I think Kevin Owens gets the briefcase here is because Owens needs the briefcase a lot more than Strowman does. Like Tony said, Strowman doesn't need the briefcase to be viewed as a viable challenger. I'm not sure the casual fan buys Owens as a viable challenger to the Universal Heavyweight Championship. Having the briefcase to cash in would instantly make Owens a threat, and that's something that the upper card on Monday Night Raw desperately needs. So I'm going to go with Kevin Owens. Shinsuke Nakamura defends the U.S. title against Jeff Hardy. Tony?
Did we lose Tony?
Did we lose Tony?
I was talking to you guys, and I don't know why it didn't go through. My headphones must not be working right. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes,
we can.
Okay. I said Shinsuke.
All right. Andrew.
Same.
Likewise, Shinsuke retains. Orton gets involved somehow, either before or after the match, probably setting up Shinsuke and Orton for the U.S. title down the road, or at the very least setting up Jeff Hardy being written off television, much like we thought he was going to be on SmackDown Live a couple of weeks ago. The Raw Women's title is on the line when Alexa Bliss defends against Ronda Rousey. And I just realized I did this match before the Bludgeon Brothers and the New Day. Oops. Oh, well. Alexa Ronda, Tony.
Shit. I don't know. I think Ronda's going to win. Don't think it makes sense, but I think she will.
Andrew?
As we were talking throughout most of this show and previous shows, we figured Ronda, when she won it, her first match was going to be against Natalya. But because of what happened with Anvil, it wouldn't make much sense to suddenly turn Natalya heel, because no one's going to boo somebody whose father just died. So I feel like this is going to either end up an Alexa win or just some kind of no contest. Because there's no stipulation on this match, right?
None.
Not that I know of, no.
So I'm gonna say it ends up a no contest, because I feel like they're just going to drag this out for like another pay-per-view.
Every part of me wants Alexa to retain. Every part of me doesn't see it happening. Ronda gets the title. SmackDown Tag Team titles are on the line when the Bludgeon Brothers defend against the New Day, depending on what two members of the New Day they choose. Regardless, I think it'll be the original team of Big E and Kofi. Tony, what are your thoughts?
As far as who's going to be fighting, because I agree with you.
Well, the match itself as well.
Oh, okay. You know what? I'm going to choose the New Day.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm gonna choose the New Day also, just because the Bludgeons have been kind of treading water, and I don't really know where they'd go after them. So, yeah, New Day.
I'm going to pick the Bludgeon Brothers, because I really want to see Harper, Rowan, Cesaro, and Sheamus just beat the shit out of each other for the tag team titles.
Fair.
So I'm going to say the Bludgeons retain, because I really want the Bar in a tag team title match on SmackDown. Just saying. All right. Let's get to the big three matches, shall we? In my opinion, the match I'm looking forward to the most on this show is Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. Tony?
Yes. And Daniel Bryan is going to win, just because that's what the story dictates, and The Miz can completely handle that.
Andrew?
Screw it. I'm going to say The Miz wins, just because that could add a wrinkle, could drag it out a little further, and I still don't think Bryan's signed a contract extension or a new contract, so September is kind of his drop-dead date. So let's just go with The Miz here.
I'm going to pick The Miz, because I think Miz will be the next challenger to AJ Styles' title. Oh, spoiler alert.
You also just picked who for the other one. Oh, no.
How dare I? Boo. Burn. Anywho. That takes us to the SmackDown title match, as AJ Styles defends against Samoa Joe. Yes, you have my prediction, Andrew. Write me down for AJ Styles retained. Tony?
Okie-do.
Yeah, I agree. AJ's going to keep the title. Samoa Joe's been doing great, though.
You know, it's weird. In a company with Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe may be the most legitimate badass of the group.
I mean, it's not really that weird, but yeah, I know what you mean.
at least, and definitely from a character perspective, Joe's the only person who's ever really been portrayed as that guy that, regardless of whether you like him or not, he's not going to back down from fighting you. It doesn't matter. If he's scheduled to fight you, you're going to catch that ass whooping. Andrew, who you got?
I'm going to go with Joe. Just because of the fact that I can't see him losing another main event feud and still kind of having that weight to kind of just insert himself into things from a casual fan perspective, because wins still somewhat matter to them. he's not going to drop down to U.S. because of the two biggest players are both heels. Him being involved in that doesn't make a lot of sense. And him and Miz could still end up with a feud. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Samoa Joe here.
Our probable main event, because the WWE hates us, is Brock Lesnar defending against Roman Reigns. Tony?
Yeah, well, you know, to be fair, this screams main event, so I'm not too upset about it. But yeah, Reigns is going to win, and we're going to have a nice little Roman Reigns reign, which, honestly, is probably better than anything we'd have with Brock, so we're getting the lesser of two evils.
Andrew.
Yeah, we've said that all year, though. I hope they don't cock-tease us with this again, and they just put the damn belt on Roman and let Brock go off and do his thing, whatever, it's UFC or a special gimmick match against Lashley at some point in the future. But just stop it. Let Brock go home. Let him go to his farm and his kids, and give Roman the damn title already.
Appropriate that you use cock tease with the Samoan sex machine.
You said it, thank you.
I hate myself.
I love you, though.
Just because the WWE are that guy, Brock Lesnar retains.
You son of a bitch.
And the Santino Morello wraps up our predictions here. Welcome back, Tony. We missed you.
Thanks.
Helpful. Thank you.
Did you
all
want
right,
reciprocation?
So,
jeez. I missed
I
you
mean,
too,
it,
Andrew.
It would be...
You were missed, but I know Harry and you have a better connection. Like, you two were, like, soulmates almost, so I get
we're
it.
We're the OGs.
He is the Johnson's day one co-host, especially when he shows up on time.
It's day one.
Ish? Or day one exactly?
Day one-ish. Because obviously I'm not on time. I'm cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he showed up. Pretty sure he showed up late to the first episode, too, so it would be day one-ish. All right, Tony, hit your line. Get out of here.
All right, deuces, bitches.
He's out. That's Tony Acero. You can find him at 411mania.com/wrestling, looking for Tony Acero. So I understand he's going to start writing for the Chair Shot soon, too. Speaking of writing for the Chair Shot, Andrew. Available online at thechairshot.com, I might add. You're welcome, evil overlord Greg DeMarco. My Progress Wrestling Chapter 1 review is making, well, progress.
Wait, did you submit that already, or?
A busier than normal week last week prevented me from getting through the show.
Okay, that's fair.
But the plan is to have it in the queue no later than Wednesday or Thursday. And hopefully up on the website this weekend.
That's a reasonable turnaround, yeah.
All right, Andrew. We got TakeOver Brooklyn 4 here. I know that you and I are both big watchers of NXT. I actually talk about NXT on a weekly show on a different network. I won't mention the network's name. But I will say that you can find that network on Spotify. If you just search for the NXT Review, you'll find it on there, I'm sure. Five matches for NXT TakeOver announced, despite the fact that we have an earlier start time here. Do you think we get a sixth match added?
Probably not. Like, because what would you think would be a sixth match, aside from like a Cassius Ohno insert match?
I would think that maybe Cassius Ohno and a guy like Keith Lee would make sense after what we saw on this past week's episode of NXT TV.
Maybe, but they usually like to build the newer guys on TV instead of giving them a pre-show match. So I don't know. I wouldn't hate it, don't get me wrong, because that'll be a good match. But still, I don't see it.
I will let you pick the order and the running for the NXT TakeOver Special here. Do you happen to know the card immediately off the top of your head?
I do not know it off of top of my head. I think I know 3 or 4 of the matches. I just don't know what the 5th one is.
All right, well, you go ahead and do the matches that you know, and then I'll fill in the one that you missed.
All righty. So, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's the North American title is Adam Cole, baby, versus Ricochet, right?
I do believe what you meant to say there was, Adam Cole!
No, I didn't mean to say it that way.
Yes, you did.
Okay, so who do you have for that one?
Adam Cole retained, because I don't think that the timing is right to take the belts off the Undisputed Era quite yet, and especially not since the next NXT TakeOver Special will be TakeOver War Games.
See, that's kind of part of my thinking, but slightly flipped, because I would want to give the belt to Ricochet because of how I have the tag match ending up. I think it'd be good for Ricochet, and I think it technically frees up Cole to maybe make a run at the NXT Championship instead of being, like, the mid-card champion, you know what I mean?
The only way Cole making a run at the NXT Championship is if we get the title switch in the main event. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. So the other match I'm fairly sure about is Mustache Mountain challenges for the NXT tag titles against the Undisputed Era, correct?
Yes. This is where
what
I
do you
put
have?
This group, and I think I pick Mustache Mountain to regain the tag team titles here. And I think that all 6 of these men that we just talked about, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, Ricochet, and Mustache Mountain, end up in the new version of War Games for NXT. That's where Bobby Fish makes his return from injury. And we get a 4-on-4 match with the Undisputed Era taking on Team Mustache Mountain, possibly including the Bruiserweight Pete Dunne on their team, where the members of the winning team get opportunities at the members of the losing team's titles.
See, that's the same thing, but again, I flip it because I have the Undisputed Era retaining because I don't think they play hot potato with the tag belts that much. You know, so Mustache Mountain beat them in the UK, then 2 weeks later, Undisputed Era took a belt back, and I think Undisputed Era might hold it for, like, at least another couple weeks, or at least until the next takeover. So, yeah, Undisputed Era tag team keeps it.
So far we're 2 matches in and have agreed on jack shit.
No, we don't agree on shit, yes. Okie dokie. So then there's the NXT women's match, which is Kairi Sane versus champion Shayna Baszler. How do you see that going?
Okay, so there's the caveat here. And the caveat is with the rumors of the main event of Evolution. Kairi Sane takes the title from Shayna Baszler. And if that happens, then I think we're getting the Horsewoman versus Horsewoman match at Evolution.
I mean, yeah, it does free things up that way. And if the winner ends up being who people kind of think it might be, that would be a nice bit of symmetry in 2 different matches. But, that's not a terrible idea. You know, I'll actually go with that, because I was torn. I didn't actually have a 100% pick between this. But, yeah, I'll give Kairi the win here, too. I don't hate that idea.
All right, so I'm going to assume by the statement that you just vaguely made there that your prediction to win the Mae Young Classic is Io Shirai.
I mean, that's what lots of people are leaning towards, and Io and Tony, it's not surprising to anybody, but they also both have a lot of history in stardom. So regardless of the winner, it makes more sense for it to be Kyrie than Shayna. You know what I mean?
Did you just spoil the tapings?
There are spoilers out there. It's not like I'm the first person to do it. And no, I guess, because I haven't seen the finals. I've only seen up to the semis for who won, but I'm just assuming out of the four that made it, I'm assuming that it's going to end up being
right
you.
Stop right there, because I don't want to know who the other participants are. I would rather watch the show and be surprised. I've intentionally avoided spoilers from the NYC group.
You were actually able to avoid spoilers? How'd that happen?
I didn't click on the articles. Pretty simple.
I mean, people were also posting the injury, so the injury kind of gave away a lot of things also, because you know about the big injury that happened too, right?
Yes, I know what happened to poor Nixon Newell.
Used her indie name.
If people are listening that don't know her WWE name, that don't want spoilers, this doesn't give spoilers. That's why I used her indie name. But yes, I am familiar with the injury sustained. That poor girl cannot catch a break, which is ironic because she literally caught a break.
That was a pun in poor taste, but still not bad. I'll give you credit there. So, now, I'm pretty sure the fourth match is that I'm foggy on, but it's probably this, after that awkward promo at the pool, is EC3 versus Velveteen Dream, correct?
That is correct. William Regal made it official last week on NXT TV, the week before on NXT TV.
Oh, I didn't see last week's yet. So, okay, that makes sense. Alrighty. So, who do you have between Dream and 3?
Let's be honest here. Dream is basically JTTF in NXT. Whereas EC3
is
a viable...
I just didn't hear what you said.
I said, let's be honest, Dream is a JTTF in NXT.
Okay, yes.
Whereas EC3 is a viable contender regardless of who wins the Last Man Standing match for the NXT Championship. I'm picking EC3.
Well, I don't disagree with your logic. I'm at that point with Dream where I feel like he needs to start winning a few rivalries since people are so high on him. So... If he's going to win any of them, it would be against EC3 because he's technically a little less established than other people he's ran into during feuds. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to Dream just in hopes that elevates him along the card somewhere either to the NA Championship or the NXT Championship. And with that... That brings us to the NXT Championship match, which you talked about the stipulation already with Last Man Standing between Ciampa and Gargano. First, I'm gonna just ask, is this too soon? Like, I know there was the injury to Aleister Black and that threw things off, but do you think it's just too soon and that killed the hype a little bit?
I think the issue happening with the thing happening with Aleister Black the way that it did and him getting hurt, they kind of rushed into this match. This is the match they originally wanted to do back at TakeOver Chicago, and then Styles and Nakamura was announced as the Last Man Standing match, and NXT was like, well, fuck. And thus that got changed into a Chicago street fight. As far as the match itself goes, I think there's more money in the chase for Johnny. I think that this is too early to pull the trigger on Johnny getting the belt off of Ciampa. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of extend this all the way out to take over War Games when
Aleister Black should be healthy and ready to go again, and they can do the originally intended triple threat match there. I'm going to say Tommaso Ciampa retains.
That makes sense. And I don't disagree, because I think having Ciampa lose on his first takeover as champion is not the right way to do it. But, okay, so here's a little fantasy book kind of concept. Since Aleister Black was written off for his injury by getting laid out in the parking lot, and they still haven't figured out who laid him out, is there any credence that you could see in the match actually ending as a draw, because the person who laid people out comes in and lays both of them out, so neither man gets up for the 10 count?
Well, are you thinking of a certain name that just recently signed to NXT as that person? Because if that's the scenario you're looking at here, I could entirely buy that as a possibility.
Do we want to talk about that, or just hint at it?
we might as well say the name here. Matt Riddle.
So, yes, that I was either thinking Riddle or Ono, because Ono is the knockout artist. So it could just be a heel turn for him by just knocking both people out and just getting sick of being gatekeeper if they wanted to do something with him. But if they wanted to go for a gimmick finish and have it be a no contest, so neither man looks bad, but Ciampa keeps the belt, yada, 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 drag on the feud for another takeover or two or whatever they want to do, having a fourth person interject themselves into this feud wouldn't hurt. You know what I mean?
No, I 100% agree with you. I think that potential is definitely there to give it some kind of a screwy finish here, because that way you can also protect the eventual full-on blow-off to Gargano and Ciampa without having to rush into it in the singles environment that you had to because of the Aleister Black injury.
I agree. Yeah, that's the only reason why I was thinking it would be a screwy finish, is because I think even they realize that if one of them wins clean, it wouldn't be a good blow-off to the feud. So they want to try to move it out to maybe the Rumble takeover or the Mania takeover and just have Ciampa go through Black and the mystery attacker and then end up back to Johnny. So, yeah.
Well, I think you could probably... if you end up having the mystery attacker involved here, you could probably use the NXT television between now and TakeOver War Games to build up to a four-way for the title between Gargano, Ciampa, Aleister Black, and the aforementioned possibly debuting Matt Riddle and or somebody like a Cautious Ono, who's been on the cusp of main event status in NXT, but has really been seen more as the gatekeeper, like you mentioned earlier, the guy that you beat in order to get to the next level in NXT. Another
Would
person
you want
is a viable
to
contender for that
main event?
Huh?
No, finish your thought, then I'll ask my question.
Well, I actually had a question for you here as well, as where does that leave EC3 as far as the title picture goes as well?
Depending on how the whole thing with Dream turns out, I think he still would be considered mid-card, just because he hasn't had any huge matches against the quote-unquote upper echelon of NXT. So if EC3 wins the match, maybe he faces Cole or Ricochet for the NA title, and then he moves up from there. Because I think everybody's just assuming that he'd be thrown into main event status because he had the run in TNA. But I don't really think that the TNA aspect really carries as much weight as some other things. Like, look, Ricochet was, like, indie darling and a half, and people think he's, like, fantastic, and he's proven to be fantastically athletic, and he's still only at the NA title. You know what I mean?
Right, we'll see where they're going to go with Ricochet and the NA title as well, with what happens coming out of that and possibly going into TakeOver. The cool thing about NXT is that there's so much that could happen, and all of it could be a fun way to go. Nothing stands out as a bad option in NXT.
Oh, no, and I think it's helped along by the fact that it's only an hour TV, and usually TakeOvers are 2.5 to 3 hours, so it just doesn't feel ingested or overdone or just... you can still kind of let your imagination run a little bit, and it's not just shoved down your throat.
NXT makes it more, NXT is more conducive to fantasy booking than the main roster shows are because there's such little content provided on a month in, month out basis. You get 4 hours a month of NXT, five in a month with five Wednesdays.
Correct. And the question I was going to ask before was, would you really want to see the next takeover be a four-way for the title? Like, do you like the idea of like this multi-man clusterfuck aspect almost?
Yes, I do, and here's why. Because it kind of plays off the history of NXT as well. Let's not forget that one of the very first TakeOver specials was called Fatal 4-Way because it was a 4-Way main event for the NXT Championship. So
well,
you can kind
yeah,
of casually...
NXT's come a long way since then, though.
I agree with that, but at the same time, you can also encourage people to go back into the archives for NXT on the network and look into what they may have missed before when people were still sleeping on the show.
Yeah, but I feel like that might hurt things too, especially if you have Gargano and Ciampa involved and they don't get a clean blow off with the belt. It might just cheapen things to some people.
Oh, but I think you could still do that. I think you could have Ciampa come into that four-way as champion. You could have him retain with some kind of dirty finish, pinning Gargano most likely, maybe using the ropes or what have you, and then have Regal say, enough of this shit between you two. We're going to settle this once and for all, and we'll settle it in Arizona at TakeOver Rumble, or even they push it all the way back and they settle it once and for all at TakeOver New York City.
But you don't feel that's a necessary step?
I don't feel like the four-way is an unnecessary step at all. I feel like it's a more bang for your buck in the main event scenario there. And they might be involved in WrestleMania too. Who knows?
Hey, stop it. I knew that's where you were going as soon as you said that. But I don't know, because I feel like it wasn't intentional. Sure, it wasn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was going to say, I figured there was more meat on the bone with Alistair against Gargano, since that didn't even get off the ground as soon as Alistair cold cocked Gargano in the ring that one time. So I feel like Alistair would want a one-on-one match against Gargano next takeover if he's healthy by then, because I don't know what kind of injury it is. And that would leave Ciampa either with Ricochet or Mystery Attacker or something like that. So I would like it to not end up being a four-way and just break it off into, like, mini feuds and then have Gargano and Ciampa meet at the end of all of that.
All right. The first part of your question as to what happened to Aleister Black is he quite literally busted his balls.
I knew it was a groin injury, but I didn't know what much it was. Okay. Really?
Singles match against Ciampa at an NXT house show. Ciampa crotches him on the turnbuckle. Aleister Black lands wrong, and testicular torsion is the official name of what happened to him. To the point that he needed emergency surgery, or he was going to lose his testicle.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Oh
so
yeah,
What's his window?
I think 4 to 6 weeks actually. So,
okay.
It's not a long-term injury, but it's definitely a serious one.
That's very true. And how many days how does NXT TV tape? Do they tape, like, all 3 months at once, or do they do it in months?
Usually about a month worth at a time, depending on when the takeover tape, or you've got me doing it now. Usually about a month at a time, depending on when the full show tapings are. But approximately three to four episodes at a time.
That works. So Alistair might miss one set of tapings, and then he'll be back for the rest of the build to the next takeover. Okay, that's not too bad. Okay.
Yeah, he'll probably miss the end of August tapings, the ones right after TakeOver SummerSlam. Like, he'll appear on television, but he won't be able to wrestle most likely. And then he'll probably be back in the ring come the September tapings.
All right, that works. That's fine, then. So, Alrighty, so there was a lot of extra talking and discussing and fantasy booking, but I think we got all five picks in there, huh?
We did. I do think we may end up getting a sixth match, maybe a feature match added as well to the show, just because they added the extra hour to TakeOver as well. You do know that TakeOver starts at 7, not 8, right?
I do now. But I'm not going to be able to watch it live anyway, because I have plans on Saturday. So I'm going to just have to binge that before SummerSlam on Sunday.
Likewise, I'm going to end up having to watch it when I get home because I have an RAPW show that night. Real Action Pro Wrestling, youtube.com/TheRAPW.
You watching and now are you doing something?
I am the play-by-play announcer for Real Action Pro Wrestling.
Oh, I thought you stepped down from doing that at some point.
I missed the show due to illness, but no, I haven't stepped away.
Oh, awesome. So, yes, plug away.
I'm getting the go-home from the boss man here at the chair shot. I don't know if you saw that in the group chat or not. So, for the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, and the third man, Andrew Ballas. I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanking you for listening to this week's episode of The Raw Reaction. We'll catch you guys next Monday night with our thoughts on SummerSlam and our thoughts on the Raw after SummerSlam, which is kind of becoming the new thing in addition to like the Raw after Mania, here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you guys later. I feel like we don't utilize that song enough on the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you guys next Monday night with our thoughts on SummerSlam and the Raw after SummerSlam here on the Raw Reaction on the Chair Shot Radio Network, available online at chairshot.com.